What are we discussing on today's podcast, you ask? Well, gotta break down that game one victory over the Colorado Rockies. How should the rotation shake down now that Zach Davies is back? And then part two with Sully Baseball, discussing which team can either be the biggest riser or the biggest regressor post-Memorial Day, all on today's Locked On Diamondbacks podcast.
You are Locked On Diamondbacks, your daily Arizona Diamondbacks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day listening to who? The always charismatic host of this podcast, Miller Thomas. I'm a multimedia journalist and I'm a graphic designer, so please go check out my website, millerthomas24.myportfolio.com. On there you can see all my latest. There you can see all my latest work, from my packages to my articles to my photos and my graphic design. If you want to see more content by me, just follow me on Twitter at CreatorThomas24 for my personal account, or look up Locked On Diamondbacks on Twitter, Instagram for the podcast handle. And of course, thank you for making Locked On Diamondbacks your first listen every day. I would not be able to do this podcast without you, my loyal listeners, sharing, subscribing, reviewing, doing all that so I could do this podcast for you. Thank you. It's free and available on all platforms, so please continue to tell your friends. For the YouTube audience, if you're watching, you can see we got some new graphics over on the Locked On Diamondbacks YouTube channel, so please hit subscribe so you guys can see it as well. But according to the little rundown that I now have on my YouTube graphics, if you look over to my left or my right, I don't know how this camera's set up, you can see we're starting off today's show by talking about the game one victory over the Colorado Rockies, because the D-backs, that game was pretty interesting because the D-backs won that game 7-5, but it was not an easy 7-5 victory because the Colorado Rockies got the scoring started in that game one against Ryan Nelson, who was shaky in that game. He settled down after the second inning, but not the best Ryan Nelson that we've seen. He was on a little, not a hot streak, but he had been performing better recently before this start against the Colorado Rockies. So a little bit of a setback for him because the Rockies offense scored 4 runs in the first 2 innings. And so the D-backs offense had to play catch up, but actually the D-backs, you know, wasted no time. Some people call them the answer backs because after going down 4-0 after 2 in the bottom of the second, the D-backs scored 5 to retake the lead. They scored another one in the third, one in the fourth, and that would be all the D-backs needed to win this game. And watching this game, there was a lot of positive things they could take away, specifically from that offense, because we didn't really talk about that series against the Boston Red Sox, but the D-backs offense just didn't show up in that series, especially when compared to the Red Sox offense, who just seemed to come through in every clutch situation that they needed, runners in scoring position. It felt like the Red Sox offense came through over and over, and the same couldn't be said for the D-backs, who in game one against the Red Sox were 1-for-9 with runners in scoring position with 7 hits, 5 strikeouts. In game 2 against the Boston Red Sox, they only had 3 hits and they only had 1 opportunity or runners in scoring position. So those first 2 games before game 3, the D-backs offense wasn't able really to get anything going. And it was nice to see this as a bounce back game against the Colorado Rockies, carry over a little momentum from that series finale against the Boston Red Sox, where the D-backs offense woke up a little bit, because you got a little bit of everything in today's game from all your offensive players. I mean, Pavin Smith leading off, that's been a big concern for a lot of D-backs fans, because it's like Pavin Smith is not a great offense player, doesn't really do anything defensively for you. It's like you got a guy like Dominic Fletcher in the minor leagues, Alec Thomas is in the minor leagues, but somehow Pavin Smith is continuing to get opportunity, even though he's not good really at the plate or in the outfield. But one area that Pavin Smith has been good this year is runners in scoring position, and he showed it again because he had a monster home run in that second inning to score 2 runners after a Josh Rojas and Jake McCarthy executed perfectly the double steal. Pavin Smith brought them home with a 3-run shot, so you can't be upset at Pavin Smith. Despite him getting a longer leash than it seems like every D-backs player, he came through in today's game. Lourdes Gurriel, he racked up a couple more hits. Corbin Carroll had 2 more hits. Christian Walker had a hit. Emmanuel Rivera, I mean, I don't know if we've talked enough about him. He had 2 hits in this game, 2 runs scored, and his slash line on the season after today's game, 343, 370, 471. Like, we haven't really talked about Emmanuel Rivera too much. Like, Kyle Lewis coming into the season was supposed to be that platoon right-hander that comes in, power bat. Maybe we thought he was going to be the breakout player for the D-backs this season, former rookie of the year. Of course, we didn't think he was going to play like 140 games, but you're like, if you get 90 to 100 games of a Kyle Lewis, or we were like, okay, Evan Longoria, he's still been productive the last 2 years in San Fran, despite not playing a ton of games because of injuries. In the games he do play, you can see him still have a productive bat and still be a power threat at the plate. But so far this season, it's been Emmanuel Rivera, not Kyle Lewis or Evan Longoria, as the bright spot among the platoon right-handed batters. Emmanuel Rivera once again put in work today. Rojas 0-for-3, but he did have a walk that led to a run scored. Huge in that second inning. Gabriel Moreno 1-for-3. Jake McCarthy had a huge two RBI pickup in this game. Geraldo Perdomo was the only player who wasn't able to get anything going over 4 at the plate. But offensively, up and down, execution was there. Rojas had a stolen base. McCarthy had 2 stolen bases. Moreno had a stolen base. You got dudes up and down this lineup getting hits. It was a well-balanced attack. And then from the pitching side, I just mentioned how Ryan Nelson wasn't that good. But we did get to see old friend Dre Jameson come in, and he looked really nice. 3.2 innings pitched, 6 strikeouts from him. He did have a little bit of trouble in the later innings because he did get the bases loaded off 3 straight singles at one point, but he was able to get out of that jam. And then Andrew Chafin came in and closed it out. Dre Jameson, it was nice to see him back. He was used as a long reliever today, and the D-backs desperately needed him because this bullpen had just been overtaxed recently. When I think about that Philly series, that series finale, I think the bullpen was overtaxed in that game. That's why the D-backs weren't able to win that series finale against the Philadelphia Phillies. You go back against one of those games against the Boston Red Sox, specifically the Zach Davies game, where he only goes 3 2/3, and the bullpen has to pitch a whole ton. Like, there's been too many games recently, and just overall on the course of the season, where the D-backs rotation outside of a Gallen or Merrill Kelly just doesn't go deep enough into the ball club, or doesn't go deep enough into the ball game. Some of it's on Troy Lavelle because he likes to yank his starters early, but he let Ryan Nelson go 5 after giving up 5 earned. It was a lot easier of a decision after seeing the D-backs retake the lead in the second inning. And then Dre Jameson, someone that has flirted between a starter and a reliever, they let him go out there in long relief, and they pitch almost 4 innings out of Dre Jameson. You get a whole bunch from him, and now the question is, could we see Dre Jameson back in the rotation? That's what we're going to discuss in segment number 2. But Andrew Chafin came in right after Dre Jameson for just 1 out. He was able to get the save on 6 pitches. So great job by the D-backs to start off this 4-game set against the Colorado Rockies with a bang, specifically after coming off that tough series against the Boston Red Sox, where the offense didn't show up. It was the first time really in a series this year where you say, you know what, it was the D-backs offense that kind of let us down in that series. The pitching actually wasn't too bad. I mean, the first game, he gave up 7 runs, of course, to the Boston Red Sox. But in game 2, you only gave up 2 runs to the Red Sox. In game 2, you only gave up 2 runs to the Red Sox. In game 3, you only gave up 2 runs as well. So overall, with how good the Red Sox offense has been this season, the pitching actually wasn't too bad against Boston. It was the offense that let us down. But in the first game, in this 4-game set against the Colorado Rockies, it was a nice tone setter for the D-backs to get back on track and show them why they're one of the premier teams as it currently stands in the National League. And if you want a premier protein bar, then the best place to get one is Built.com, because if you're looking for a delicious snack but don't want all the sugar and calories, then you need the best tasting protein bar ever, Built. You got to try this, because if you're like me and you want a healthier snack but you don't want to compromise on taste, then I got just the thing for you, Built Bars. Because Built Bars are just absolutely delicious, they're healthy, and they taste amazing. Seriously, you have to try one, because the thing that makes Built Bars so great is they're covered in 100% real dark chocolate. That's right, real chocolate. And they come in unbelievable flavors like churro, peanut butter brownie, and cookies and cream. And the best part, they're low calorie, they're low sugar, they're high protein, they're high fiber, so they're great for that keto diet. Right now, for years I've been talking about how you can order your Built Bars at Built.com, but now you can also get them at your local Walmart or Sam's Club while you can still get your specialty flavors still at built.com. So that's right. Head to your nearest Walmart today. Walk to the pharmacy section and grab yourself a box of Built Bars. You can pick up a 4-bar box of cookies and cream, double chocolate bar, or coconut puff. If you're close to Sam's Club, run in and grab a 13-bar box with our hit flavors, brownie batter puff and churro puff, and can thank me later. All right. Let's get back into the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast, and let's discuss the D-backs rotation, because we've seen a flurry of moves pertaining to this D-backs rotation in the last week because we've seen Zach Davies get reactivated off the injury list. We've seen Brandon Pfaadt, the top rookie pitching prospect, be sent down to the minor leagues. And we've seen Dre Jameson, the electrifying and tantalizing talent, get called up. And so now the D-backs could make some noise in their rotation and shake it up if they want to, because you got Gallen and Merrill Kelly locked in, of course. But then you got Tommy Henry, Zach Davies, Ryan Nelson, and who else am I missing? Dre Jameson. And it's like, okay, that's four guys for three spots. Dre Jameson is currently in the bullpen, but how should this D-backs rotation actually shake up, shake down? What is the optimal version of this rotation? Well, currently you got Gallen and Merrill Kelly in the front line, and I kind of like how the D-backs have it split up right now, where it's not Gallen and Kelly back to back. You have a youngster in between, because you know Gallen and Kelly are going to give you guys insane chances of winning a ball game and have a potentially quality start. So I kind of like the idea of splitting them up in the rotation, putting Merrill Kelly as that number three. So if you do win that game two, the Merrill Kelly could come in for the sweep, or sometimes it shakes up where maybe you get two youngsters bookended with Gallen sandwich in between the middle, and then you have Kelly starting the next series in the rotation. So sometimes I like it when it's like that. Sometimes you get Gallen in one series, Merrill Kelly to start the next series, and I like that, how you could split them those two guys up, and you can still have a pretty dangerous and deadly frontline duo without them having to be back-to-back. So I do like how Torey Lovullo has split them up throughout the course of the season. And if I have to think about the rest of the rotation, how I would shake it down, of course, Gallen Kelly got two spots. But that third spot, who should go in between those two guys? As it currently stands, I wouldn't be upset with a Tommy Henry. It sounds weird to say Tommy Henry as your like number two starter, I guess. But with how he's performed this season, I think Tommy Henry has been the most consistent guy of the youngsters. I think he's pitched pretty well recently. Tommy Henry's never going to be a shutdown guy that goes out there 7 innings, 1 earned run, 8 Ks. But he can at least be a stabilizing force for you. In that most recent game against the Boston Red Sox, he did go 1.1 innings pitch. But before that, in his start, because he didn't really get a chance to start in that game against Boston Red Sox. If you look at Tommy Henry's starts, 5.2 innings pitch, 2 earned runs against the Philadelphia Phillies on the 22nd. Before that, 4 2/3, 4 earned runs. But before that, 6 2/3, 2 earned runs, and 6 innings and 2 earned runs. So recently, Tommy Henry has been performing well. It was kind of weird to see him come out the bullpen in that game two against the Boston Red Sox, because he's been a rotation guy. We haven't seen him in relief too much, so it was a little surprising to see him do that. But with that good performance out the bullpen, considering 3 of his previous 4 starts also were good, you now have 4 of his last 5 outings are positive for Tommy Henry. And I think I want to keep him in the rotation when he's in a groove like this, because a guy like Ryan Nelson is struggling right now, or at least he did today. And I think he's just been a lot more volatile than a guy like a Tommy Henry. And I know Dre Jameson has also been volatile. I know Brandon Pfaadt has also been volatile, but Tommy Henry, because he's young and because he's been a stabilizing force so far after Madison Bumgarner got DFA'd, I wouldn't mind him as a number two, considering he's also a lefty starter. So you could go righty Gallen, lefty Tommy Henry, then righty again, Merrill Kelly. And then as my number four, I think I'll go Zach Davies as that also just stabilizing force. Like Tommy Henry and Zach Davies are kind of like two sides of the same coin, both from a lefty and righty perspective, where they're both trying to be ground ball, pitch to contact type of pitchers. They're not going to overwhelm you. They're not going to, you know, dial up the Ks, but they're going to sit in the low 90s, and they're just trying to get through 5 to 6 innings and just play clean baseball and just give up between 2 and 3 earned runs. They'll be happy with that. And as a D-backs organization and a fan base, you'll be happy with that as well. So you get your dominant Gallant and Kelly in Game 1 and Game 3, and then you get a safe high floor guy in Game 2 and Game 4 in the Davies and the Tommy Henrys. Maybe they don't have a high ceiling, but at least you get high floor guys in Game 2 and Game 4. And then in Game 5, I'll throw in Dre Jameson as that wild card starting pitcher, because I think he's the most electric and tantalizing guy as it currently stands of the Tommy Henry, Ryan Nelson mix. It's an argument between him or Brandon Pfaadt, who has better stuff, who's more tantalizing. But Brandon Pfaadt, I don't think, is ready just yet. I think he still has a larger learning curve than the rest, so I'm glad that he's back in the minor leagues right now to work it out. And Ryan Nelson, he's a guy that coming from the offseason and coming off last year, we talked about how he needs to work on the secondary stuff, how he was fastball dependent. And we've seen a big growth from his pitching arsenal this year. But I think Ryan Nelson is at his very best, probably a two-pitch kind of guy where he throws a hard fastball, throws that 70% of the time, and then he works a changeup or a slider off of that. So I think Ryan Nelson, I think I would like the most in the bullpen, because I want him to just come out the bullpen and throw 97, 98, just throw as hard as he can for an inning, be a middle innings, be a seventh inning guy. Him and Scott McGuff can fight for that seventh inning role. Then Dre Jameson, I want him as that number 5 starter, because I think he has the best stuff. Maybe he struggles to go deep into ball games. He definitely has issue with giving up hard contact. He has a little Luis Frias in him where he can look very nasty on the mound, but he can also give up a ton of loud contact, get a little bit wild, struggle with his command a little bit. But considering his upside and ceiling, I think a Dre Jameson has a higher ceiling than a Tommy Henry or a Ryan Nelson or a Zach Davies. But because he doesn't have the floor of a Davies or Tommy Henry, I want to put him as that number 5 starter. Then Ryan Nelson, I just think he has the best makeup as a bullpen guy. Dre Jameson is better as a long reliever, but as a one inning, throw as hard as you can bullpen guy, I think I like Ryan Nelson the most in that scenario. And so my final rotation would be righty Zach Gallen, lefty Tommy Henry, righty Merrill Kelly, righty Zach Davies, and then righty Dre Jameson to round it out. I think that's the best 5 I can get. Eventually, I would want a Brandon Pfaadt, a Ryan Nelson, a Dre Jameson all in the rotation, fight it out with Tommy Henry. Eventually, you want Zach Davies to move on and have probably 3 youngsters after a Merrill Kelly and a Zach Gallen in that rotation. But I don't think this D-backs rotation is matured enough for that. I don't think those youngsters are ready enough for that at this moment. I like Zach Davies in the rotation because he's a high floor guy, and Tommy Henry kind of fits the same cloth. So that's why I picked those two guys as my number 2 and number 4 starters. And then Dre Jameson, with his talent, I want to see him get one more crack in the rotation. But the D-backs are not going to yank a Dre Jameson back and forth between the rotation and bullpen. They want to keep him consistent in one role, but I want to see him at least maybe get a turn pretty soon through the rotation. Maybe give him a couple turns through the rotation. Let Ryan Nelson sit in the bullpen for a little bit and let him see how he likes that role before you decide anything, because I think it's smart for the D-backs not to just one day you're starting, the next week you're relieving. I don't think that's smart. So if the D-backs do decide to switch roles with Ryan Nelson and a Dre Jameson, I think you'll probably have to do it for at least like 3 turns to the rotation, 4 turns to the rotation, so you can really get a good sample size from both of those guys out the pen and in the rotation. But that would be my 5 of how I would stack it up. Now let's get into that part 2 with Sully Baseball.
I'll tell you another team that, you know, based upon what we've been saying a little bit, I think the Brewers are going to make a move, make some sort of move, some sort of trade for a bat that will be that spark plug. Yeah, I'm not saying they get a superstar. They're going to make a move to get a professional hitter in there And that professional hitter will just kind of change the chemistry, change the biology of the lineup. And I think what's going to happen is the Brewers are – remember how last year the American League Central was completely just dense and like only one game separated three teams for most of the year? And then Cleveland just said, F this, and they put on the F thrusters and just won comfortably. I'm taking a look at this division. I love the Pirates. I think the Pirates are one of the most fun teams in baseball. And I thought going into this year they had a chance to be a 500 team, and I think they probably will be a 500 team. But I don't think they're, you know, unless some of their young players just explode, they're not there yet. The Reds are a fun story, but only because of the division that they're in. Like you were saying, in any other division, this would be, yeah, they stink. The Cubs, I think David Ross, I don't understand why he still has a job. And I do think that both David Ross and Schneider of the Blue Jays have to make the change. I mean, Ross, absolutely. And Schneider, we're seeing the Blue Jays, even with some of those wins against Minnesota, have just stumbled to the bottom of the standings. But, you know, the Cardinals are the team that have just stunned me, that they are just not, you know, I was thinking, do I think the Cardinals are going to catch fire? And I've seen nothing about this Cardinal team that makes me think it's going to catch fire. And so I'm wondering if Milwaukee's going to take a look around and say, why don't we just make a couple of moves and just be better than everybody else? Where 90 wins means you probably win the division by 11 games. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think if they 90 wins, you win this division comfortably. And so if I were in Milwaukee, and I think Milwaukee has talent, they can pitch. And I think what they need is that big professional hitter in the middle of that lineup. Again, doesn't have to, we're not talking about them acquiring Mike Trout or something like that. Just a good solid hitter in the middle of that lineup that will just keep the lineup moving and kind of, you know, take some of the pressure off of the rest of them. And I think the Brewers are going to have a very good second third of the season. And as much as I would love to see a Pittsburgh or a Cincinnati win that division, right now I just think Milwaukee looks like the only team that, you know, assuming that the Cardinals don't have a turnaround, that the Brewers will be the one that puts on the aft thrusters and eventually just puts everyone away.
I actually feel the totally opposite when it comes to the NL Central. I feel like this Brewers team is just a bunch of just smoke and mirrors right now. And I actually think they're going to have one of the biggest second half regresses in Major League Baseball. Just because I look up and down this team, you look at it currently, they have a negative run differential, one of the worst in their division. I know. Yeah, so they're only slightly behind the Cincinnati Reds when it comes to run differential. You look at their lineup just statistically, Rowdy Tellez is the only guy hitting above 800. Most of their guys, like Willy Adames, has been like their best offensive player the last couple years, and he's currently injured and he's having down season. Yelich is once again struggling. Jesse Winker hasn't done anything. Like, there's really no one in that lineup that's had that productive.
That's my point. This is predicated on the team making a move. This is predicated entirely on the team saying, you know, bringing in a professional hitter that will, you know, that will spark the rest of the lineup. As this team, I mean, that's why I said they'll look around, let's pick up this guy. And all of a sudden that one hitter suddenly takes the pressure off the Yeliches and everyone else, you know, to start playing better. If they don't do that, then this is probably an 81 win team.
Yeah, because I don't think there's any spark coming. I think you would honestly have to like replace like 3 to 4 different dudes in the slime just because it hasn't worked the last few years. This offense is just, they've been looking for another batter the last few years. And when they do get that extra batter, like a Hunter Renfrow, they'll trade him in the offseason for like a Jackie Bradley Jr. So I think this Brewers team, I think it's going to be like how the Brewers handled the season last year, where they were a good first half season. Where they were good in the first half of the season, and then they got to the deadline. What did they do? They traded away Josh Hader and kind of tanked in the second half of the season. I think we're going to see the same thing this year. We've already seen discussions about how Corbin Burnes maybe hasn't exactly been happy so far with the Brewers this year, and he hasn't exactly lived up to being Corbin Burnes this year. He's had a good season, but not like that elite Corbin Burnes type of year. Freddie Peralta struggled a little bit. Brandon Woodruff has been hurt. Like, I think it's actually the perfect kind of year for the Brewers to have a reset. Their bullpen has been elite. Like, you could trade away some bullpen arms if you want. You could trade some of those rotation starters if you want. And then honestly, a guy like Willy Adames, I think he's going to be a free agent this offseason, or he has like an option. So it's like you could just retool this whole thing if you're the Brewers, trade away some of your rotation guys, trade away some of your pitchers, maybe a trade of Willy Adames and restart this thing all over again. Yes, you're still in the worst division, but I do think that Cardinals team is getting hot. I do think they've played a little bit better in the month of May. I would have to check their record, but they still have way more talent than I think this Brewers team. They're five games back. Like, if we're talking about the Reds of taking this division four games back, like, I'm going to look at the Cardinals five games back with still so much more talent. It's been a weird situation. They don't know whether they want to play Contreras in the outfield DH catcher. It's been weird. But with the amount of talent that they have on paper, I'm looking at the Cardinals to take that division because I think the Brewers are going to have a major second half collapse. Intentionally, maybe.
Brewers are going to win the World Series.
Wow. That's
go to FanDuel.
Play,
look,
yeah,
what it, look at your 401k.
Let's see. Go I'm gonna try to look it up real quick. What those odds are on on the Milwaukee Brewers to win the World Series?
Yeah, let's say I take $100. Let's say I take $100 out right out of bet on the Brewers to win the World Series. What would I get back?
Let's see. I have it right here, actually. Milwaukee Brewers. They're plus 2,700. So I think if you put $1 down, you could get like 270 back.
What if I put 100 down?
You get 2,700 back.
There you go.
Boom. That sounds like amazing money. $100, though. You hope you got to be ready to
lose. Wait, what
that.
If I put $10,000 on?
Well, that $27,000, I'm guessing. You know, now I'm not – we're in the math part of this podcast. It's not my strength, Silly Baseball.
All right. Well, do you know what your strength is? Putting on a great show. So tell people where they can follow your show.
Hey, follow me on, all your streaming platforms, Locked On Diamondbacks. Follow us on YouTube. Please hit subscribe on the Locked On Diamondbacks YouTube channel. If you want to follow us on social media, at CreatorThomas24 for my personal account, or look up Locked On Diamondbacks, both Twitter, Instagram for the podcast handle.
And you can follow me. I am your pal, Sully. I'm at Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram. We didn't do a trivia question today, so the previous trivia question is still out there for those of you who is the only person to win a World Series for two different New York franchises. In order for this, and they had to have been someone who actually played in the postseason the year they won the World Series. So the only two players have won the World Series for two different New York franchises, and they were active players in the postseason for both of them. So send those answers to either Sully Baseball on Twitter, Sully Baseball Podcast on Instagram, or to the YouTube channel. And you could follow those at all those places. Talking about baseball as we start the summer score. And don't forget, the purpose of baseball is to entertain you in the summer. This has been a Locked On MLB, Locked On Diamondbacks crossover. Last one with this graphics format next week. Brand new graphics will be on for this one too, like the other episode. He's Miller Thomas. I'm your pal, Sully. Let's fist pump for another week.
Boom. That's it for this edition of the Locked On Diamondbacks podcast. Thank you to everyone who tuned into today's podcast. Come back tomorrow for more Diamondbacks news coverage insight. We've been trying to get Nash Walker on the podcast, so we'll see if we're able to make that happen, but no promises. But thank you for making Locked On Diamondbacks your first listen every day. If you do listen every day, put hashtag everydayer in the comment section on YouTube. Don't forget to catch every D-backs pitch on their hometown broadcast when you download the SiriusXM app and search up Diamondbacks on the App Store. And as always, stay safe, stay healthy. Doses.